The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Ali Moreno. A little later on, we'll be reflecting what happened in La Liga and the Bundesliga today. But we'll start in the Premier League. Manchester City one step closer to winning the title after a 2-1 victory against Aston Villa. Meanwhile, Spurs closing the gap on Chelsea in fourth, coming from behind to beat Southampton 2-1. Craig Burley, Jurgen Klinsmann and Nader Manua are with us. Craig, let's start with the City game. Is City OK?
Sorry?
Are they all right, City? They're not quite at their swashbuckling best.
Oh, I thought you said, am I all right? I thought,
well, no, I know you're not all right. Why would I ask if you're all right to start the show?
Well, that's why I was confused. So I just, you know, normally you don't inquire after my well-being. So I, you know, the concern would be that's, I think that's four games for club and country. The last four games that the errors have started to filter back into John Stones' game. If you remember, I think it all kicked off with the England game at Wembley, where he was dwelling on the ball and got caught, and then out with a couple of long balls against Leeds and the Champions League game against Dortmund. And then he got, with that ball over the top today, the quick free kick, he didn't deal with it, and then obviously he had his red card. So I think that would be the worry, that he's out of the Carabao Cup final now because of the suspension, but when it gets to the knockout games in the Champions League, it could be the second leg of this semi-final. What does Guardiola do? Is it Laporte and Diaz, or is it Stones and Diaz who have played pretty much most of the season? So that would be the concern about the sloppiness at the start. But apart from that, they pretty much control the rest of the game. I mean, after that first 5 minutes, City really put the hammer down.
Yeah, it was the first time really this year under Guardiola that we've waxed lyrical so much about the City defence, Nadim. Are we seeing some cracks of concern? Obviously, they're going to win the Premier League, but when it comes to those big ties against PSG?
I think the point that Craig makes is, at this stage, is looking like a valid one. I think when he said it a couple of weeks ago, I didn't take it too seriously, but I think John Stones has made a couple of mistakes recently, and ultimately they're amplified because they tend to lead to big moments, whether it's a goal or a red card like we saw today. But then in the same breath, I think Pep Guardiola trusts him. And for City and the defence, overall, they're not doing that badly. I think to be able to keep lots and lots of clean, I think it's something whereby for as much as you put effort and technique and whatever into it, in some ways you still do need a little bit of luck as well, and it seems at times that luck has left them because the other teams are taking their chances, which maybe they weren't doing not that long ago. But ultimately, you look at the way that they're playing even today, they're managing to take chances and they're winning games, and even though they're not blowing teams away, the beauty of today was the fact they controlled the game. I think even when they went down to 10 men, they still controlled a lot of possession, and then when it went to a 10v10, ultimately, I would have been surprised if Villa scored again, but that's ultimately what City do. They're trying to finish off this title race by controlling matches because you're not getting extra points for scoring more goals this time.
Jurgen, how do you deal with someone in that situation that John Stones is? Obviously, it's been a great comeback season for him, but as Craig mentioned, when he makes a mistake, he seems to be making it very much under the microscope. How do you help him going forward?
Well, I think that obviously Pep Guardiola knows exactly how to deal with a situation like that. It's important to sit the player down and discuss that, those incidents, and to go through them. And obviously they have their videos on the side. And I think there's the individual relationship between manager and player comes really into play. And I'm sure that Pep Guardiola is handling that well.
Next up for City, of course, it's the Carabao Cup final. They will face Spurs, who are in action today, coming from behind to beat Southampton by 2-1. Ryan Mason in charge of Spurs for this tie. Did we see an improved Spurs, Craig?
Not really, no. I mean, they were pretty awful in the first half. And I think Southampton's waning in second half of games is a consequence of the way they play. because they were so energetic and driven in the first half and got around Spurs and disrupted Spurs and then created, you know, quite a lot of chances themselves. I mean, Shea Adams should have scored after, I think it was a couple of minutes, with a volley hit straight at Hugo Lloris. And so Spurs were all over the place for 45 minutes. It did get better for them, but as I say, I think Southampton tend to wilt away because of the way they play. And then Spurs' passing got better, it got sharper, it got quicker, it was more incisive, and they started to look more dangerous. So that was one of the reasons. And listen, Gareth Bale scored a great goal, but up until that point, you were like, my God, is he on the field? But he can do things like that. But I don't think there was a big sea change in Spurs. I don't think it's anything for Guardiola or City to concern themselves at the weekend any more than it would have been had Mourinho been the manager. But yeah, there's a lot of work to do there, but it wasn't a great performance, but it was a win, and that's what this interim manager needed, and that's what this team needed.
Jürgen, what did you make of the decision to sack Jose Mourinho?
Well, obviously it's a huge, huge decision, and the timing as well, just a couple of days before the League Cup final there on Sunday. But I think he just wanted to send out a signal that it's not going in the right direction. Daniel Levy saw himself forced to cut the rope and figure out now over the next couple of months what to do. It was definitely a decision against Jose in terms of style of play, which we always discussed in the show as well, and what the Spurs fans really wanted to see. I think, you know, from kind of where they are in the table of the league, you know, you can still justify certain things. You know, they are 2 points behind now the Champions League. So anything is still possible getting in the Champions League. But obviously what they wanted is they wanted to go for the title. And they were in the beginning of the league, the beginning of the season, they were up there for a little while. And then they dropped month by month. So he pulled the plug. Now it's really, really important for this club to finish off the season as good as possible, meaning desperately getting into the Champions League. If they win the League Cup final on Sunday, awesome. Then they have probably the smallest trophy you can win in England, which is still nice to have a little piece of silverware. But it is crucial to get into the Champions League.
Nadim, you take a look at the odds to finish in the top four. Spurs very much the outsiders, with Liverpool favourites to take that fourth spot ahead of Chelsea and West Ham. Do you agree, Spurs out of it?
I would probably have to say yes, to be honest. I think the way that Liverpool have gained, feel like they're gaining a little bit of momentum, and the way Chelsea have been playing recently as well, I'd be very surprised if Spurs won all five games. But then even still, if they did, I think to be coming from the position that they're at now in terms of chasing that pack, I think it's going to be very, very difficult. But obviously it's football and anything can happen, but it would be a huge surprise, I believe.
Let's take a look, shall we, at the odds as to who will be the next Tottenham manager. Nagelsmann coming in as a favourite. But it's interesting when you take a look at the gentleman that is 12-1 list.
Oh,
hello.
Hey, yeah.
Jürgen, would this be something that you would be interested in?
Well, I don't know if it's 12-1. Is this good? Is this bad? You guys tell me.
It means if you tell me you're going, I'm running to the bookmakers right now, and you'll never see me again.
Well, I tell you, anything is possible in life. I tell you, you know, I never thought in the first place I will coach Germany towards a World Cup. I never thought I coached the U.S. for 6 years or Bayern Munich. So we'll see in a couple of months who's going to be the Spurs manager.
Oh, I like that.
Hey, man.
Would you mind taking Craig Burley with you as an assistant of some sort?
Yes. I take the whole studio.
Hey!
We're all off. Ah, dear. Craig, what are you waving your glasses around for?
Well, I was waving, hoping to get, you know, and the off chance I might get a job as the kit man or something. You know, if Jürgen goes, I don't know.
You could be the psychologist, cheer everybody up, pump them all up,
bring that positive energy,
Nothing better than grabbing somebody with the grabbing somebody around the here and giving them a good shake.
Yeah.
There you are, Jurgen. It's fit made in heaven. It's perfect. We've gone pretty much, 8 minutes into this show without mentioning the Super League, but I suppose...
The league! Don't use the word super. It's just to be known now as the league.
Just as the league. Jurgen, what was your reaction to it and what went down over the last 72 hours?
I think it's been quite crazy what went down the last 2-3 days. Obviously, you know, this approach, this idea of creating that Super League without actually letting anybody know beforehand is really sad. It's sad because obviously you discussed it already up and down always, but the biggest issue I think, you know, going forward with this whole topic is there's no trust anymore. You know, that when there's a breach of trust between clubs, within the leagues, between obviously, you know, those owners of those 12 clubs, you know, with UEFA, this is difficult to fix. It's really difficult to fix. You know, I mean, I was on a call this morning with UEFA. Actually, you know, they invited their so-called UEFA ambassadors towards the European Championship this summer on a Zoom call, and you know, that was the biggest topic. Is now how do you go back to normal? You know, even if I think the UEFA reacted very strongly and rightfully so. I think, you know, Alexander Seferin did a great job to go straight in the face of these people and telling them his opinion and making it clear that there are consequences, you know, if you're not backing out of that idea, which they eventually did within a couple of hours, then, or within a day yesterday. So I thought, you know, UEFA handled it really well. But still, you know, going forward now, there's this feeling that who can trust who, you know, within... Obviously, the Premier League with the 6 clubs within Spain, you know, with the 3 teams or the 3 teams in Italy. So this is a dynamic that we've never seen before, and therefore it is not easy to solve going forward.
Alex, just
what about the groveling apologies today from some of those involved? I mean, John W. Henry, clearly the PR at Liverpool, stuffed him in front of a camera on a chair and said, speak, man. And then we had Joe Glazer, who said, the Man United owner or co-owner of Man United said, we need to rebuild trust. They didn't have trust in the first place. The United fans have never trusted them. They despise them. They don't like the way they run the club anyway. So there's never been trust. There's even less confidence now, as Jurgen said, in what these people might do. Yes, it's been thwarted for the time being. And then we have Man City, who apparently sent an email out to all the supporters. Oh, wonderful. Another spam email telling me I'm sorry. So, I mean, just... And also, I read somewhere today that they hired a PR... This sums it up. They hired, I think, a former political PR person from one of the British political parties. But she wasn't brought in till late on Sunday night. I mean, it's just... I mean, the whole thing is just quite incredible. And by the way, as we speak now, are the 2 Spanish sides,
yep,
Barcelona and Real Madrid and Juventus, are they still in this competition?
I think it's only Real Madrid and Barcelona who are officially still in this. It's just Clásicos. Clásicos galore. But Florentino Perez, Ali, meanwhile, just there going, no one's dropping out. It's all fine. We've got the point.
Right. Couple of things. If Florentino Perez is going to be out front of the cameras talking about retaining the youth of the game and going after the 16 and 24-year-olds, is that really the person that is going to really communicate this message? Is this the guy who's going to relate to that age group? The answer is no. The other thing I would say is that the Super League teams, if you're going to put out this statement, and indeed we're going to have this Super League, you all have to be on it 100%, on board, everybody. Hey, together, because you know there's going to be a backlash. But there were cracks in this before they even put out the statement, before they even put it out there as an option. And the moment that they felt a little bit of backlash, then everybody started backtracking. You cannot go and make this sort of statement and say, you know what, we're going to create this league without having a full-on commitment and saying, hey, yes, there's going to be a backlash, but we're ready for this because we're together. together, nobody's together. The moment the backlash started, everybody said, hey, PR here, PR there, we apologize here, we apologize there. That's Barcelona and Real Madrid's problem. I don't know. You know what? We're sorry. We didn't mean it. My bad.
Yep.
It doesn't work that way.
Nadim, how has it all been received in England over the last 24 hours? These apologies that Craig brought up, obviously something new.
Well, we can talk about the apologies, but I'd ask Craig, at this point, some of the people who were involved in this anyway, these are essentially the villains of world football as it is, when we talk about Florentino Perez and so on. So for these guys, they've made a terrible decision in the way that they've organised this whole system. But I think it's also kind of revealed some of the significant flaws that existed within football anyway. And the fact that, you know, they're coming out and apologising, it makes no difference. Everybody still knows those people. They know the villains. And to talk about the fact that there was no unity in their joint statement on Sunday, I think that was very significant because in some ways, yes, this has been a PR nightmare, but it made it slightly easier for some because they never put their words to the statement on Sunday and Monday. And that's why I believe that the tournament itself was, or the league was never going to happen, because I don't think people fully believed in it, even though it felt like they were there with it. Because say the Perez and I think the United owner and stuff, they're coming out saying this is that, this is what we believe in. And realistically, if there was unity, as Ale said, everybody would get behind it. But the backlash has been outrageous. But let's be very, very clear here. When we talk about this Super League, people have this desire within them to believe that football, it is a meritocracy, but it's something which is based around, success is based around having the greatest amount of resources and more money available to you. So even though a closed league is something that nobody wants, it's kind of been an unofficial closed league for a long time now, and that's where we've let football get to. So unfortunately, some of these issues that were simmering below the surface, they've come out and people have had to deal with them head on, and it's been a very, very tough few hours for a lot of people, but thankfully, that's been pushed to the side, but I still think reform needs to be had because ultimately this situation is the lesser of two evils as opposed to the perfect solution.
Jürgen?
Well, the big topic certainly is, you know, how to rebuild, you know, relationships, you know, relationships between these owners and UEFA relationships, but also between the ownership groups and all the clubs that did in these 12 different clubs, with their coaching staff and their players, you know, because obviously, you know, for the coaches and the players, these last couple of days were an absolute nightmare, you know, and therefore, you know, I mean, football is built on relationships. Football is built on you got to earn your spot and earn your spot in the way, you know, over decades, how the system was built in all the different countries around the world with promotion relegation. And if you earn your spot, you go move up, you move down. And now comes this idea, which is clearly, you know, they called it in Europe. Therefore, they called it the American model. The American model based on the NFL and the NBA. It's a kind of a closed circuit. You know, it's just people can come in, but MLS similar too. If they pay us a decent amount of money, and then you can be part of that closed circuit, and we protect you, so you're not getting relegated. You know, nobody takes your money away. And in a certain way, it's kind of a socialist system within a capitalist country. You know, if you do really badly at the end of the year, you get the first draft for the next season. and all these things in our football world, they don't work. They don't work because, you know, teams like Man United or Tottenham or Real Madrid and all these great teams, they are based on more than 100 years or 125 years of history. Millions of fans are connected emotionally, and for everyone working in those clubs, it is an emotional thing to represent that specific club. And what they did now was basically they kind of set themselves apart from everyone working in those clubs. So now to rebuild that kind of a connection with your own people within the club, and obviously within the system, meaning now the Premier League or the Serie A or and so forth, it's going to be really tough. It's going to be very, very difficult.
Well, the Champions League, of course, continues, and Leicester are looking to book a place in it, and they will be going one step closer to that qualification if they can get a win against West Brom on Thursday. Leicester 2-1 on to take all 3 points. Well, just a reminder, this weekend it is the Carabao Cup final, and it is live on ESPN Plus. Manchester City taking on Spurs. Coverage starts at 10:30 a.m.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Action in La Liga today. Comfortable win for Real Madrid away from home at 3-0 against Cadiz, which puts them top of the table. Level on points with Atletico Madrid. Atleti, of course, with a game in hand on Real Madrid. Barca with two matches still to play ahead of their rivals. Meanwhile, Real Madrid president Florentino Perez has given his second interview of the week as Gab joins us along with Jan. And Gab, he is very much doubled down on what he said in his first interview, basically saying the Super League is on standby, but we have to do something because football will be dead if we don't.
Yeah, he's insisting on this, and he's motivated by the humongous losses that the big Cubs have incurred as a result of COVID. And he insists the project isn't done. He says the project has been going on for 3 years. But then, of course, minutes later, he said, well, maybe we didn't explain our project very well because we were never given the opportunity. And to which most people would say, well, gee, you've been working on it for 3 years. You've been negotiating with UEFA for 6 months. You signed a freaking agreement with UEFA saying that you were happy with the new Champions League format on Friday. And then on Sunday, you come out and you go in a totally different direction. I think you've had plenty of chances. He also said that, you know, this project that he's been working on for 3 years is necessary because of COVID, which might lead you to wonder, gee, did he know that the global pandemic was coming? he said that in England, you have a situation where six big clubs lose money and the other 14 don't make money, which I think would be news to a lot of people in England. And he said the same thing in Spain. He said Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, and Real Madrid all lose money. The other 17 clubs are all rolling in money, which, again, just simply isn't true. And, you know, look, I feel a little bad because there are legitimate reasons. These clubs do have some legitimate arguments to be made. They have legitimate concerns, which is why they negotiated with UEFA, which is why we've gone to this new Champions League format. None of those legitimate concerns are being articulated by Florentino Perez, other than this sort of generic stuff about how young people don't watch the games. And he mentioned, who wants to watch Elche against Valladolid? Nobody's watching on television. This is boring. This is rubbish. You're not going to get anything done talking that way, and you're not making a good case for yourself. And, you know, I got a text from somebody at one of those Super League clubs who was listening in, and it was just three letters, SMH, shake my head.
Why does he keep talking, Gab?
He keeps talking because, well, first of all, nobody else will, right? Nobody else, even Andrea Agnelli has come out and said, you know, look, it's obviously not going to work now. Let me step aside. And look, it's a fair thing to him. He's the only one putting his face forward to this. You didn't hear anybody else make a case for this other than him and to a lesser degree, Andrea Agnelli. Everybody else from Glazer to John W. Henry, all these other people were content for Florentino to go and do the heavy lifting. That said, he's not helping their cause. He's not helping their case. And I think he's talking because he is surrounded partly by yes men. He's surrounded by a group of people who genuinely believe that Real Madrid comes first above everything else. And look, after all, he is the Real Madrid president. It's his job to look after Real Madrid's interests. And if they can cut a better deal for themselves by whatever means necessary, he's going to do that. And that's an echo chamber of people around him who point to all the European Cups and Champions Leagues he's won and how successful they are. And I think they just validate everything he says. But it's obvious from the start, and this is the other thing, even if you buy his argument, if your goal as Real Madrid is to deliver the Super League, you know, whatever you may think of it, they've gone about it completely the wrong way. The wrong way strategically. They lost all the leverage they would have had in terms of bullying UEFA over it. They didn't get their point across. And the whole thing was just it wasn't just bad for football, in my opinion, but it was also absolutely incompetently executed. And, you know, that is on the people who were leading this. Florentino Perez, Andrea Agnelli, the Glazers, and the people at Liverpool.
Yeah, and he's coming across completely deluded. Nobody has yet paid the fee for leaving. We're almost all still in this. They have not left yet.
Well, you know, Dan, when I saw his quotes tonight and when I read it and I saw the strategy of these 12, and I was thinking, should I take it seriously? Or should I just start laughing, making jokes? What should we do? Because these are people in their profession, very successful in their different things they've done, the projects they've done all over. In football, like the guys at Liverpool, they got Jurgen Klopp in. Great man, one of the best coaches around. You get great players in. Real Madrid get great players in. Zinedine Zidane and so on and so on. So, you want to do a project like this. It was like my 18-year-old daughter will do a project in school. And I'm thinking, is that too harsh on my daughter? It's like unbelievable how amateurish this all is done. And Perez tonight is talking about the depth. And I understand that Gab got a vital point. He doesn't hide. Maybe he should, but he doesn't. And he's talking out and about the need for Real Madrid. We don't have money. Well, yesterday, they signed David Alaba. David Alaba, who is like holding out now for 3-4 months to get more money of Real Madrid. And I don't think he's reduced his price the last months. So the thing is that in every profession, if you don't have money, you have to lower your costs. And that is the only key that people understand. And he says also tonight that they don't understand our world. I will say that 99.99% of the whole all football fans in the world, they so understood the world of these people. I mean, this what happened in these 48 hours. Never have we seen someone so much understanding this world. Imagine the successful thing they've done. They have made FIFA and UEFA look like, I use the metaphor, the foundation of Mother Teresa. And it's like unbelievable. Nobody could do that. Yeah, but couldn't you hire the best lawyer or the best strategic or the best presentation officer, or call it whatever you want. No, you do it all by yourself. And I think, and Gab said it, this text he got from, I think they're embarrassed, to be honest.
Yeah, Gab, this is very much the picture that he's trying to paint, is that UEFA have come out and slapped this down and the monopoly that they have. And I think everyone agrees that definitely there could be changes made, but they're doing it, as Jan said, in completely the wrong way. He came out and said there are only 40 Chelsea fans protesting before the match, and we know who put them there, as if UEFA paid these Chelsea supporters to go and protest the Super League. What are you doing, man?
Well, to be fair, I think he probably has a point. You know, I live near Stamford Bridge. I saw a whole bunch of sort of Slavic-looking guys in leather jackets. I think those are Alexander Čeferin's nephews that he sent down. Now, look, you can see the pictures. You can see it's more than 40 people. Why are you saying this? You know, this sounds like, I don't know if those who are old like me will remember the Iraq War and like Saddam Hussein's Minister of Information who's standing out there as the bombs are falling and say, everything is peaceful here in Baghdad, nothing's going on. You know, and you see the American tanks rolling behind him. I mean, come on, man. He's talking, I think, to a very, very narrow audience who look at him and say, you know what? You're the only person who can save Real Madrid from this debt, which, by the way, isn't true. Real Madrid have an enormous debt, but it's a debt that's manageable. Real Madrid are a huge institution. What they probably can't do, as Jan said, is they can't manage a debt and go and throw money around the way they've done before. But guess what? Very few people can. There's been a global pandemic. European football is losing between $6.5 million in 2 years. And the big clubs are bearing the brunt of this. So that's not in question. But instead of going on by this, you talk about conspiracies. You talk about how, there was one English club that wasn't really committed to this and they turned the others. I mean, sowing all sorts of doubts and conspiracies. Let me tell you this. Alexander Shefferin is not that powerful a guy. He can't go and tell those fans. By the way, City fans, you think City fans like Alexander Shefferin, whose organization, you know, banned them for 2 years from Europe and they had to go to CAS? No. This is nothing to do. These aren't a bunch of puppeteers at UEFA maneuvering people. It's an organic rejection of the customers, the people who are going to go and buy this product, saying, we don't want this kind of change. And that is his tremendous screw up. And it's not about UEFA being angels or being good, because there's a lot of flaws over there too. It's just that on this occasion, they did what they were supposed to do. They looked out for their stakeholders, the clubs, the federations, the fans, the players, the coaches, everybody came together. So, you know, this is the reality here.
Well, what's interesting, Ali, we're both fathers to teenagers.
Yeah.
Banging on about this 16 to 24-year-old and how they've got no attention span. Uh-huh. They can't watch a match. My boy will play Fortnite Among Us and then sit down and watch Manchester City. But, you know, why? Mm-hmm. Where is he getting this information from? Clearly somebody has given him some survey that's asked three kids whether or not they like football, and they've gone no, and he's just rolled with it.
Well, let's take him at his word and say, yeah, this project has been going on for 3 years and we've worked around the clock until 1 a.m. to make sure that we put together the presentation that we wanted. Right. In those 3 years, whenever this 12 owners got together and they were talking about, okay, this is how we're going to present this, and this is the person who we want to be the spokesperson of our group. Let's go and appeal to the younger generation with the stuffy old man who has an absolute disconnect with the young generation. But he's the one, funny grandpa, who's going to come in and really gain and garner their attention. It just goes back to the initial premise that we've talked about. This has been so disorganized and so all over the place and so like, yeah, we're together, but we're together if it works. If this doesn't work, then everybody scatters and everybody covers their own back. And this is exactly what's happening here. They expected pushback. They expected a backlash, but not quite what they got. And because they got the backlash and the pushback that they got, then everybody went into their corners and everybody is just saying, hey, we're sorry. We're sorry. We didn't know. We didn't mean to. And yet Florentino Perez, the stuffy old guy, the funny grandpa, he's still out there saying, the kids, we're doing this for the kids. Come on, man. We're better than this. Or are we? That's really the question. Are we better than this? We should be. But the truth of the matter is, I don't think this is the end of it. And we'll be hearing more from Florentino as time goes on.
Final question I got to ask from all of that. Who's going to win La Liga?
Hey, for Florentino Perez, Real Madrid.
But no one cares.
No. What about the kids?
No.
What
no,
about
the kids? Don't care. Oh, my crikey. The action continues then on Thursday in Spain. Not that anyone will be watching. It's Atleti against Huesca, Granada against Eibar, Real Sociedad players to Celta Vigo. Big game for Barcelona, of course, at the Camp Nou. They take on Getafe. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. So a nice win for Wolfsburg. You feel this is going to go right down to the wire, isn't it, as to who will be representing the Bundesliga in the Champions League next season. Bayern will be champions, of course, 10 points clear of Leipzig in second. Wolfsburg, with that win, moved back to third. Eintracht Frankfurt fourth. Borussia Dortmund fifth. 4 adrift of Eintracht Frankfurt with 6 games remaining. Jürgen and Jan are with us. Jan, let's talk, shall we, about Borussia Dortmund. Oh, 4 games remaining, sorry. Keeping the pressure on. It's going to be tough for them, though.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because they have a tough rest program. And these wins, they won in Stuttgart, which was, after that first half they had there, was convincing at the end, winning that game, Knauf getting the winner. Then they win at home against Werder Bremen and Union Berlin. But now start the difficulties for them. Now they're going to play Wolfsburg. That's going to be a very tough game. I think they were solid again. Wolfsburg today, and they don't like to lose, and they nearly never lose a football game. Then they are playing Leipzig. Then they are playing Mainz, who with Bo Svensson is on fire in the German Bundesliga, and the last game against Leverkusen. So if you think of 4 games, it's 12 points, and they're 4 points after Eintracht Frankfurt. It's going to be tough. But still, you have to give credit to Dortmund. Union Berlin today is not a bad opposition. It was a deservedly win. They should have, like you showed in your video there, that they should have won more, a lot more, actually. So good win for them, respect for them. But now it's going to be a tough 4 last games of the Bundesliga. And remember, we are talking about them getting among the top 4. Mm. These should be the main challenges to Bayern Munich. Now they are 19 points adrift for them.
Wow. Who have you got finishing in the top 4, Jürgen?
Well, I think it's going to remain the way it is now. I think really the team that surprised the most throughout the entire Bundesliga season is Wolfsburg. You know, they're playing an unbelievable season. And in the middle of that team is a kid called John Brooks, you know, American kid that is playing probably the best season of his career. So he's really, week in, week out, one of their best players and deserves a lot of credit there. I think this is a big surprise, you know, that they are in third place, that they are doing so well. I think it's going to be, as Jan said, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult with those remaining 4 games for Dortmund actually to break into the top 4.
Jürgen, what did the Dortmund CEO talk about Haaland's future? Jan, what did the Dortmund CEO say about Haaland's future today?
Now, it was Watzke again. Remember, in Germany, they before the games, they are, because people ask me, why do they always talk about these players? Because it's different in Germany. Because before games, you will have the CEO or the head of sport or the team manager will always come out. And he said, whatever, going forward and back, at the end, he will stay here for another season. Okay, people can say, well, he has to say that. And they have a history of a couple of players like Aubameyang and Dembele striking to get away from Dortmund. I can never see that Haaland will do that. And maybe with the Super League thing now, just show you there are a couple of 3 clubs who probably don't have any money to spend. And then to spend 150 million euro on one player could be very, very hard. So I think it's most likely that Erling Haaland will stay there for next season, even if they didn't come into the Champions League, because I don't think there are any buyers on that price.
How would that affect his career? Would that be detrimental that he wouldn't be playing in the Champions League next season, Jürgen?
No, not at all. I mean, he still plays in the Europa League, so in European competition. He's still obviously very, very important for his national team. And the Bundesliga is one of the top leagues in the world. So there's nothing wrong with that to go a year like that. You know, obviously every player wants to play in the Champions League. And the whole discussion actually about the Super League and the failing of this approach that they're trying to do, it's already there. The Champions League is pretty much a Super League already in the way, you know, it's an exclusive group of teams that remain then, you know, from the knockout stage on in the competition. And it's a very, very special competition. There's no doubt about it. And they started that in the early 90s. And they had a plan there. I think for Haaland, it's absolutely no problem to continue in Dortmund, to continue his path of growth. You know, he's by far not a finished product. He still has a lot of work to do, fine-tuning, getting used to the tremendous rhythm that he has to play internationally, domestically. So a couple of years still growing in Dortmund for him would be no problem at all.
Meanwhile, Jan, we discussed yesterday Schalke, of course, being relegated for the first time in 33 years. Just horrible scenes we saw that the players had to face.
Yeah, it was. And these are terrible scenes and you don't want to see them. I mean, football is important, but it's like that important. Yes, Schalke, very passionate club. A club that for a couple of seasons ago, they were in the Champions League. And it's, of course, very disappointing for the great fans that they're out of there. But these are not the great fans. These are just idiots, because normal fans who support their teams don't do things like this.
No, Jan, I'm just wondering what the repercussions could be, because that was scary for the players, being chased by the fans in that sort of situation.
Well, yes. And I mean, the security things in and around the teams. I mean, probably Jürgen as well. Or Jürgen was always winning when he played in Germany. But I remember we went to Ulm with Eintracht Frankfurt. We were losing 3-0. And the 2,000 Eintracht fans stopped our bus. We couldn't get out. We had the police coming out to get us out of the stadium. Sometimes things like that happen. But it's still terrible to see, because... But I think there's a lot of frustration. There is a lot of things that need to get out now. And I think that was a part also on the positive side of this Super League thing, because you can't get into the stadium. You can't get out your energy there, but you can't get out your posters or singing for or against the team. But scenes like that has nothing to do with that. That is just idiots who needs to be in prison.
Yeah, just idiots, Jürgen.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is going far too far, and it's a disgrace, you know. But their emotions are just kind of getting away with them. I mean, it's a very difficult time. I've just spent a week in Germany, just came back, and the situation there is not a good one. I mean, it's COVID is still not under control. I know the lockdown is still there. You know, at 9 o'clock, people have to be at home, or the police is driving through the streets, you know, looking at people being still outside, you know, and then you see a season happening like it happened for Schalke, which was an absolute disaster. Nobody could predict that Schalke 04, you know, will not only go down in the second Bundesliga, but the way they're going down in the second Bundesliga is just so sad, you know, and they have one of the biggest following in German football. And so you have a few ones of those fans that are just going crazy now and going far beyond of what should really happen. But the situation is not an easy one right now in Germany altogether with COVID. They still have a couple of very difficult weeks ahead of them for the people in just a normal social life. So when something like this now happens with Schalke going down second Bundesliga, it just explodes. But it should never happen like that.
Yeah, Jürgen, have you ever seen anything like this before in Germany?
No, not really in Germany, but I had similar experiences, like Jan said. You know, I mean, we lost a game here and there, and then suddenly the fans blocked the bus, or you have to wait 2.5-3 hours in the stadium until you can leave it, because they're just frustrated. Sometimes the players go out, they talk to the fans, they try to open up a dialogue, like Peter Cech tried, you know, 2 days ago at Chelsea, you know, trying to talk to the fans and calm them down. He understands their emotions. I think we former players or coaches, we know what's going on inside of these fans, you know, but still there are limits. There are limits. And therefore, this is very sad to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is an important issue that Jürgen is talking about, because these are not isolated in the society. This is a part of the society, and the strict laws get even harder now in Germany. There was another law now coming from Angela Merkel. So this is tough times, and I think in general the football fans, and there are loads of them. Imagine they're like blocked out of the stadium, you know, for ages. This is their passion, their hobby, their identity. So it's going up now, but I'm just saying that on the positive side, I think that these unbelievable 48 hours with the Super League just showed you what the fans can do if they use their energy, if they use their passion positively. And I hope that can come out of these days, that maybe, and I hopefully, that they will have a look at Germany, because there you can see that is the organization of the clubs, lower ticket prices, and so on and so on. So hopefully this could be a start of something great, but then you have to use your energy in a positive way, of course.
Jan and Jo, as always, thank you very much. Four games to go then in the Bundesliga. We got you covered on ESPN Plus throughout the weekend. It starts with Augsburg against Köln. Then on Saturday, Mainz against Bayern Munich. Bayern with a chance, of course, to seal the deal. Wolfsburg against Borussia Dortmund. Meanwhile, the standout tie, isn't it, for that race for a Champions League place. Much-needed win for Juventus. Let's just take a look at what all that means. Well, that victory puts Juventus up to third in the table. Inter now 10 points clear of Milan at the top. Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, what stood out for you today?
Well, apart from the late comeback from Sassuolo, cued by Mr. Raspadori, who is the poor man's Aguero, as they like to call him in Sassuolo. Look, we're entering the stage of the season that, as far as Inter are concerned, and I feel like I say this every week, it's just about don't drop points, keep pushing ahead. If you want to make jokes about how, like, you know, they struggle in midweek, ha-ha, well, they struggled because I thought Spezia played really, really well. I think it was a big win for Juve. And regarding that Ronaldo free kick, Dan, last time they jumped against Porto, people all complained when they all jumped and it went under the goal. This time he stayed put. Now you're going to tell me somebody was lying down behind him. So, look, the guy can't catch a break. What can I tell you?
Oh, what? You and your Ronaldo sympathy ways.
Oh, my goodness.
Super League, Agnelli, how's it all being received, Gab?
Not great. I mean, there are a whole bunch of people who are talking, who are continue to attack Agnelli basically daily. There were rumors that he'd been forced out at Juve. Juve have denied them. I think he's hunkering down and he's going to weather the storm. I mean, you have to realize Agnelli has taken a whole bunch of abuse over the years. And, you know, I think he's used to it. He made a joke and said, well, you know, I think that only brings me good luck, the more people insult and attack me. So I don't think he's fazed. What Serie A are debating right now is, you know, are there sanctions that are applicable to Inter, Juventus, and Milan? Are they just posturing for the fans? I don't know. I think to go and actually punish the clubs at this point with material financial sanctions is, personally, I think it's only going to make things worse. But certainly that is the mood in Italy. And by the way, also that narrative where some people are putting out there about how, well, Juve fans are all happy with this and, you know, they don't care, they're Juve fans. Juve fans putting a banner up, I tweeted it out, basically saying, like, you know, you're selling our history and you're trying to make money off of who we are. We are Juventus, shame on you. And obviously, you know, no surprises for guessing who that's directed to.
What did Maldini say today, Gab?
Maldini was interesting because this has been an ongoing narrative. It kind of, this is something that we've seen a lot of clubs. He came out and he said, I just want to make clear that I had nothing to do with these discussions. I wasn't aware of them. Still, I feel the need, I feel the responsibility to come out and apologize. And, this is something that, you know, in my reporting, it's certainly, a lot of people have told me that at their clubs, this was really limited to the very, very highest levels. This was limited to ownership, the CEO, and then eventually when the statement came out, the comms people. I don't think it's a coincidence as well that if you look at Liverpool, what John W. Henry said, you know, he said, you know, don't go after Klopp, don't go after Billy. That would be Billy Hogan, who is the managing director there. And it just goes to show that it's very insulated at the top. The problem for Maldini is that when he says he knew nothing about it, you know, the reaction in Italy has been incredulity. You know, how could you be such a senior figure at the club and not been in the loop? But I think that gives you some sense of how this thing went ahead. It was really, really tight, need-to-know basis, and a lot of very senior people at a lot of big clubs were just entirely unaware of it until the news broke on Sunday.
Thank you very much, Gab. What a Gab and Jules podcast it is going to be on Thursday. Got a lot to discuss. Just a reminder, the Italian action continues tomorrow. Roma taking on Atalanta. That's at 12:30, followed by that huge game regarding the race for the top four. It's Napoli against Lazio. Both of those games available on ESPN+.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That is it. That brings to the end of today's show. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra time is next. It's a long one.
Jan.
Over 20 minutes.
Well, Jan can't stop talking. What do you want me to do?
Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Ali with me in the studio. Jan and Nadim join us as well. What a treat.
Hey, last time that we were together, Jan, Nadim, and myself in Extra Time. Jan called us a couple of Muppets, you and I.
Yeah, he called us Muppets. Yes, that was very insulting.
You two Muppets in the studio. Yeah. Why are you having fun?
Yes, I wrote to HR about that. Very disappointed.
Did you get any response?
they said we have other things to discuss with you, Daniel.
All right.
We'll do more of a priority than
Thank you, Kermit. Thank you, Kermit. Thank you.
Exactly. Nadim, why is it always after sacking the manager, the team tends to play well? Now, what are the chances of Spurs against City, given their defence not looking rock solid recently?
Well, if you speak to Craig Burley, he said that Spurs didn't actually play that well. They got a win. So ultimately, I think for some players within that camp, I think looking at it, you could see that there was a bit of a bad energy around when the manager was there because he was criticising them in the open and things like this. And ultimately, most players are quite sensitive. So when the person who's been upsetting you leaves, it gives you just that little bit of a spark. And for that team now, the pressure's off for them because it's not being given by their leader. So I guess that's probably why the performance could have been a bit better today. But ultimately, they're a good side who can win games. And a game against Southampton is a game that they should have won. So let's not read too much into that. But yeah, it can be a bit of a funny sensation. It's not something that I like either, to be honest.
Did a manager ever throw you under the bus publicly, Nathan?
Me?
Yeah.
Not publicly, no, because overall, the intent was always right. But I've had a very, very good insult. Myself and many others at Man City under Roberto Mancini, we had some really good insults. He said things like, he'd pull the team together and say, you guys are only good with Yaya Toure. If he doesn't play, you're no good. Oh. And he said to myself and Sean Wright Phillips one time, this was a career low. We were doing a passing drill and Sean Wright Phillips and I did it right. And I remember Nigel de Jong played a ball he shouldn't have played, but Mancini missed that point. And he came to myself and Sean, pulled us together. He says, are you guys okay? It's like you've never played football before. And in that moment, I was like, what did you say?
Wow, that's brilliant.
That was fun.
Jan, did a coach ever publicly criticize you?
Well, not maybe publicly, but I mean, I've experienced everything. Remember, I had Felix Magath, who was a quite tough coach in Germany, but I had a good relationship to him because I think he was the funniest manager I've ever worked with all his methods and tools. But I remember my first coach in Rapid Vienna, Hans Krankel, who was a great goal getter of his generation. And I remember once to halftime, I think he felt that I didn't play well, and he put a bin in front of me, and he said, "I swear to God, you can never dribble this bin either." And things like that were going on all the time.
Wow.
And I had a manager in England. I won't name him. But he had the F word, and he used that was his word.
Right.
I asked one of the young kids to count how many times he said it at halftime, and result 53. 53
wow.
It was. A great, great scholar of the game.
Really got you going. Nadim, I saw a story in a newspaper about you this week.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Oh, you read newspapers still. That's very good. That's very good, very classic.
I was looking at the picture. The picture's of you. And it was about you and Wayne Bridge.
Oh, right. Allegedly, there was a time where myself and Wayne Bridge were, let's just say, very, very insignificant during our time at City. And maybe Wayne had hurt himself doing something he shouldn't have been doing, and he needed somebody to cover up for him. So somebody here pretended to hurt somebody else so that the guy could maybe get a bit of treatment and not get criticised. But ultimately, in that time, it made no difference whether they were there or we were not, because we weren't playing. He didn't want us there, and we were just there to survive, basically. So that's what we did together.
So the plot was that he'd injured himself doing something that he shouldn't have been, and you had to put in a tackle in training to make it
yes.
look like that was what caused the injury.
Yes.
The master
yes,
plan.
That's exactly right. That's what you call a great teammate. Remember that.
I agree.
Nathan, what's that like when you're on the just completely out of the starting 11, on the periphery of the squad, just day to day?
Oh my goodness gracious me, it's bizarre, because for me that was my club. I joined the club at 10, and this was 15 years after I joined the club, and all of a sudden I'd gone from playing under every manager to all of a sudden I wasn't in the starting 11, I wasn't in the 18,
wow.
I wasn't part of the travelling 20. I was training with essentially the under 16s. There were a few of us who were doing so, and we were doing it at the time at the same time as the first team, but we were on a different field. But then the manager said he'd had enough, so he just took us out of that, and we had to come in to train at 3 while the other first team trained at 10. And the reason we were in at 3 is the very last person had left at that point, so that was when we could come in. And for me personally, I'm not a disruptive influence, so you feel ashamed, insulted, and you know that you have to go elsewhere, but in that moment you can't just say, well, I'm going to go here or go there,
right?
Because you don't have that luxury. So it's very, very tough, but thankfully I survived and I learned a few lessons from that point.
Was that Mancini? Is there any sort of dialogue?
With some managers, yes, there can be dialogue, but with Roberto, for as good as he was in terms of coaching a team to play exactly how he liked, he didn't really have any sort of relationships with players. He didn't like confrontation, didn't like being in a room with someone to tell them why something was going on. And to basically sum him up, I remember there was another point where I'd play on a Wednesday in the cup, not play on a Saturday, and then the following Tuesday I'd play for the second team. And it happened once, happened twice, I thought, okay, this is weird, but because it was only happening to me, happened 3 or 4 times, so I said, let me go and speak to him. So I knocked on his door, and I said, I just want to know why this is going on, because there's some players who play who don't play any games for the first team and don't play for the second team. Mm. And he said, well, do you not want to play football? I was like, aha, you got me again. What do you want me to say? But yeah, he doesn't... He was one of those people, he didn't like confrontation, and it's just his way or you move on, because this is the same guy who tried to stop the first team physio and masseur from traveling to America for a pre-season tour because he didn't like them.
Wow.
So he's not somebody to deal with confrontation. He just makes it happen and say, well, this is it. And ultimately, if he had more of a personality, I think he would have stayed there for longer.
Yeah. Oh, I could talk about these things all day, but we have questions.
Oh. Yeah.
All right, Jan, sorry. All right.
No. It was a great story. Great story.
Would you ever, Ali, be able to be a manager? Sorry. Would you ever be able to be a manager while you were still in your 20s, as Ryan Mason is? How impressive is his feat? Can I twist that a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
Would you deal with a manager who was younger than you?
I would have some difficulties.
Right.
I would. Certainly, if I'd been a player that had been in this club for a long period of time and sort of seeing managers come and go, and you've grown up with this club and you feel like, okay, this is part of your life. And now this guy, who you didn't really respect as a player, or maybe you didn't think a lot of, or maybe he wasn't your favorite guy, now he's the one telling you what to do. When you feel like you've been around the world and you know nuances of the game that perhaps he doesn't quite understand, that's, I don't know that you've lived through enough experiences to be a manager at that age.
Yeah,
I have one on that, Dan. I came to Middlesbrough and I kind of replaced John Henry. I was a striker at the Middlesbrough, and then later in my career I came to Barnsley and I replaced him again, and he was now at Barnsley, and our manager left us and went to Sheffield Wednesday. So, and I was the roommate of John Henry, so he turned into be the manager, and he wasn't a manager. He should never have been a manager. John, I think John will admit that now. And I knew straight away when my roommate was my manager, I knew straight away I wouldn't play. And that happened.
Wow.
And the first thing he said to me, "Yeah, and call me Gaffer." And I said, "I can't call you Gaffer." And he said, "You do that or you will never play." And I didn't play for a long time. So after 5-6 months, I had to go away. And I played some games, but I had to go away. So I went to Germany, thank God. I played for Eintracht Frankfurt. And then he called me. And I think I've been into this story before. But he called me. And this was the guy who could call me Gaffer, call me Gaffer. And he called me. And I took up the phone. And I swore to him in a humorous way. But all the swear word I knew in English. And I said, "You little everything." And then he said, "Oh, you're signed, have you?" And then he went over, and then we were friends again. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And my roommate, I didn't have one inch of respect for him. And of course, that's not a good start when you want to be, he wanted to be a playing manager, playing instead of you.
Yeah.
But I think Ali has a valid point, because it's hard to respect people like that. But maybe this new generation, they are more used to it. Look to Germany with Julian Nagelsmann and his likes. There are people around 35, 36 when they turn into managers.
Here's the other thing, looking at it from the perspective of the young manager, the 20-something that is now a manager. If you're a 30-something that is a well-established pro and well-respected by the players in the locker room, by the fans, by the media, you're a threat.
Right.
And you don't, if you look at it from the perspective of the young manager, that guy, that 30-something who's well-established and well-respected, that guy is a threat.
Right.
And so how do you deal? How do you manage this guy? Well, the easiest way to manage it is get out.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be part of this project going forward. And you'll sell it as, you know what? We're talking about youth here. We're talking about a new movement. We're talking about a new start, a fresh start. He cannot be part of the fresh start. But the reason in part is because if you're a threat, that guy is never comfortable. The manager is never comfortable.
And that's why I think, Dan, with Julian Nagelsmann, I would just finish what Ali said there, because if Julian Nagelsmann, everybody talks that he is the wish candidate of Bayern Munich, but I don't think we have done the discussion, will he fit in at Bayern?
Mm.
Because Bayern is all about politics and all kind of things, and there is one camp for this one and another camp for this one. I'm not sure that Julian Nagelsmann, with his Mozart kind of thing, that he is the wonder kid, and he is a great, great coach. But I'm not 100% sure that when he was at Hoffenheim with a great sporting manager, Red Bull with a good staff around him, is he ready for take on Bayern? I think that is going to be an interesting discussion coming into the next weeks.
Jan, does Raiola doing the world tour with Haaland's dad have a link to Super League? Because clubs like Madrid and Barcelona have no money, but were linked to Haaland. Did they think that they were going to get the Super League to fund Haaland? And would that make sense?
Well, Perez just have to found his stadium first. I think we should start there.
Yes.
And Barcelona need money to fund Messi, to him staying. I just saw he bought a new house in Miami now, so the rumors are going wild, of course. But no, I don't think that is anything to do with that. But what it is, what we know about this Super League thing, is maybe that will have an influence on Haaland, because I'm not sure that there will be buyers for him to get that money. And so maybe that they found out that, but I didn't talk money on that trip. That was all about sport, of course.
Of course. Nayden, why is it so hard to find four guys on a team that are willing to do their part in a wall? Has the game really gone that soft?
honestly. So it takes a certain type of mentality to accept and almost want the ball to hit you when somebody takes a shot. And I realized as time went by, there are fewer and fewer players who want to do that. But unfortunately, as well as if a direct free kick is close, there's also a chance that they might play something clever. So you need people to be able to defend close to the goal as well, because how many times you see a shot go in and there's a rebound and somebody comes and taps it in. So you have to like put your trust in people in the wall, but still have some defenders on the outside. But the ones in the wall, they're all so pretty, they're so precious, their hair's great, their skin's great, you know, they couldn't possibly get hit by a ball. But for me, whenever I went in the wall, I would always be in a position whereby I knew if it went over me, it would probably be a goal. So I was doing everything I could to head the ball away, do everything like that. But unfortunately, for some people, it's token and they just hope that somebody misses. But do your job, because all that stuff matters. It's the same as every other set piece. Do your job and you will be okay.
Some people,
but unfortunately, it seems like four people is just way too many to find in the wall these days.
Some people include Cristiano Ronaldo today.
Yes.
The goal by Parma today goes over the head of Cristiano Ronaldo and everybody else in the wall is jumping. Ronaldo did this. This. Ball goes right over his head. Okay. It's a moneymaker.
Well, yeah, look how pretty
it's a moneymaker.
If you look like Nadum, you can get a hit by a...
You know, Nadum, myself, we're going to be in the wall, we're going to take it in the face, it doesn't matter.
Nadum, how would you feel about being the one lying down, like the draft excluder?
Oh, yeah, a terrible position.
That one there, honestly, like, I don't know what's going on. The way I see that more times now than I see shots even going under the wall in my entire life.
Yeah.
I really don't understand why it's become such a specialist thing, but people are really, really buying into it. Like, I remember the one where someone had run back to maybe head it off the line, but this laying down one.
Yeah.
No one's getting hit by that. And to be honest, it's just another way to just hide a player. Give somebody an important job to do. Okay, you just lie there. You're helping the team. Good for you. Congratulations.
Would you be the liar? Would you do it, Nadum, if you were asked to?
Listen, as a player, I always did exactly what I was told. Don't get me wrong, sometimes I'd raise the eyebrow about what I was being told to do, but right. I would do it, and I would do it to the best of my abilities, lay perfectly still on the floor as somebody kicked the ball. Yes, I would do it.
Let's ask Mancini about that.
I'm all about the team.
Mancini may say differently.
But you know, the thing with Mancini is he would say I did it wrong because I'd be facing the wrong way. That's the problem. It's not just about laying on the floor. It's about laying on the floor in style.
There's
certain ways to do things.
I think that is the worst job in sport now, taken over from that guy or that girl who was sitting with his finger on the net in tennis, sitting there for 5 hours. Net! And now they do that automatically, I've noticed. So now they needed a new job now. So they were thinking, what do we do? Well, we get a football player to lie under the wall. I mean, that must be the worst. And probably Liverpool got another coach for that as well, because they are very detailed into all coaches.
Oh, so don't tell Stevie that. Stevie's still ranting about the throwing coach. Ali, what's the most bizarre outfit you saw? You saw your or opposing manager wearing during a match?
Oh.
Bizarre, huh? I'm going to tell you this. The first time I ever saw a coach wearing soccer shoes, actual soccer shoes,
right,
in the sidelines,
yeah,
and a professional game was Stevie Nicol.
Was he?
Oh, yeah.
Stevie wore cleats?
Fantastic. Oh, brilliant.
Full-on cleats.
Did he have shin guards on?
No. Yeah, he had like the tracksuit and the cleats on. I'm like, is this guy ready to go or what? Is he gonna play?
I never thought of
that. Well, I don't know.
No, they do that.
Well, they must do that somewhere else, but not where I grew up, and certainly not something that I'm used to. And when I saw it, I'm like, well, I guess he's ready.
They're definitely freebies.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Jan, is that normal?
No, I think it's normal in England. They do that, and they like to be the tough guys, and especially in the old days and probably in lower leagues as well. So you will sit. So you will always have an assistant coach, and if someone in the winter will sit there with his T-shirt and with his boots on. Yeah, you see that. And I can understand how Stevie Nicol did that in the USA. But I think the most bizarre I've seen in the modern time is Julian Nagelsmann with that suit that he had at Old Trafford. You remember that one?
Yes.
That was, it looked like he's going to the World Championship of Chess.
Yeah, he lost 5-0, didn't he, in that game?
Lost 5-0. Lost 5-0. So I don't think that that suit will go to a museum. Or maybe that's what it will end.
Okay, right. We run out of time, so we're going to skip the next two tweets. We'll go to the penultimate tweet here. Ned, do people call you Ned? Nadum?
Ned, Nadum, Neds, Chinadum, everything.
Ned, I just think Ned Flanders. Ned. I mean, we're calling you Ned.
It couldn't be any less like Ned Flanders, but sure. Sure, whatever you say, Dan. Whatever you say.
Oakley dokley. What's the conflict like for youngsters eligible to play for multiple national teams?
Yeah, good question.
Because you're going to play for Nigeria or England?
Yeah, I could have done, but ultimately, like from my side, it's not really a conflict because the way that things work out, unfortunately, is that I was born in Nigeria, I was raised in England, I was doing well for my academy, I started to play for the first team, and then bang, there's a letter from England saying, we're going to pick you up after this game on Saturday, and you're going to play for us from Monday. Like, that just arrives, that's what it is.
Wow.
But there's nothing from Nigeria at the same time. And when you're in England and you're playing in that associated league and they call you up, like you're going. There's not a choice. They don't ask you, would you like to come? They tell you you're coming. So for some, the true conflict is when you find a letter from Nigeria, a letter from England, say a letter from whoever at the same time, and you have to make a choice. But very few players actually end up having to make that choice. And unfortunately for me, you know, I would have liked to have played for Nigeria at some point and it never worked out.
Right.
But that's because ironically, they thought that I was desperate to play for England, but all I was desperate for was for them to have tried to call me up and me to have had a choice, but the choice never came. And ultimately,
sliding doors.
It's unrequited love, isn't it?
Yeah.
She never asked me, I never asked her. With England. Oh. Great. Oh, couple of kids with England.
I wasn't stuck with England because I never played.
Well, exactly.
I never played, so I was hardly stuck with
them. So what could have been, and never was.
I could have won World Cups with either team. You know, that's how great both nations have been in World Cup competitions. But no, it's one of those things. I think if the smaller countries on the world stage reach out to those players from younger, then I think they'll get more. But unfortunately, they seem to miss their opportunities because they're not as organized and as prepared as maybe their counterparts like England, who pick up players from 15, 16, 17, 18, and just the moment they're eligible.
It's an interesting theme because I think that, if I understand the question as well, because the football clubs got to be aware of that, because there could be different thing in different families. There could be broken homes and one from one country and one from another country. So I think that is sometimes I saw our federations here in Norway as well, that they said, but they have to choose when they are 16 or 17. Why should they do that? We don't know their family thing. So we should respect that. And then you have the other side. If you see through some of the great, great German, so-called German or Polish, or call it whatever you want, Miroslav Klose, Lukas Podolski, Mesut Özil, Gundogan. So I think that it could be a very positive thing as well to help with integration and all that kind of thing. So it's a big question, and I don't think that the federation or the club should take it easy. They should solve this in a respectful way and respect for the families.
So what you're saying, Jan, is that we could still see Erling Haaland in an England shirt?
No, I don't. I said that, but when Norway had a discussion, I tried to be a bit cheeky about that, and I got hammered in Norway because he's born in Leeds, but now he's played for the first team here in Norway in a qualification game, and then the rules are they can't do. So he will stay in Norway.
Oh dear.
If you have a centre half, can you please send him over, please? We need one.
Oh yeah, we've got lots of those. Where's Diego Costa up to these days?
What
country is he playing for?
He's hanging out with Ned Flanders.
Right. Final question. I just moved and there's a Venezuelan restaurant near me.
Ooh.
What should I try first?
Well,
arepa.
Right.
Of course.
Well, I don't know what that is.
Staple, don't worry.
Okay.
That's the first thing you gotta try.
Right.
But the Venezuelan main dish, sort of the staple, and not only say arepa, but el pabellón criollo, which is shredded beef, fried plantains, black beans, white rice, and of course, arepa.
Oh.
There you go.
Arepa.
Perfect.
When Mummy Moreno comes to the house.
When Mummy Moreno comes to the house.
Mrs. Moreno gets a little jealous.
Yes, she does.
Because Mummy Moreno's food than hers.
Well, yes. But Mummy Moreno also spoils me.
Right.
And who doesn't like to be spoiled?
Yep,
exactly. Oh, you're going to make me shredded beef and arepas? Yes.
Yeah.
I can eat that.
Yes.
Oh, you're going to make dessert as well? My favorite, some key lime pie? Yep. Oh, yes. You're going to do that? Oh, Mommy. I'm going to tell you this. Mrs. Moreno's not doing that every week or every day for that matter.
Oh,
I love you, babe. Love you.
Keeping up with the Morenos.
The Morenos. More unrequited love. That's it.
Love you.
We are done. Thank you very much.
That love you.
Very long extra time, which ended in divorce. So, love
what? That's going to be expensive.
Get those solar panels working.